Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This is going to be the new Entourage Guide. I'm going to send you over to Jason Rugard. He's going to tell you just what Entourage we're talking about.
We are talking about that infamous show that ran on HBO from 2004 to 2011. We are going to be covering the entire 96 episodes over the course of these podcasts. Of course not.
And the movie?
And a movie. Yes, I forgot about the movie. I always forget about the movie for some reason, even though I like the movie. We're going to start, of course, at the beginning. Season 1, Episode 1, titled Entourage. So Trevor, tell them what to do.
Go ahead and zero out your counters there. If you'd like to listen along with us, or I should say watch along with us and listen to us, we are going to hit play now.
I love that HBO logo.
Doesn't it? This always makes me think of Entourage.
It does, even though they've had
it's just weird for me.
Hundreds of shows on here. It always,
yeah.
And I was never a big Jane's Addiction fan, the band that does this theme song, uh-huh. Your superhero. Did you ever like Jane's Addiction?
It's all right.
Interestingly enough, Kevin Connolly gets top billing here, and he's the biggest star in this cast. He had the longest career. He's in a Rocky movie, for that matter. I was getting prepared for that. But he had that television show that was kind of like Married with Children. Remember that was on for a while? With the talking, was it Greg the Bunny or something
right,
like that?
Right, Greg the Bunny.
Kind of a cult show. But he was a child actor and good friends with Leonardo DiCaprio. So I always read that in real life, Connolly was the Vince of the group. And he just kind of played the background guy in this.
Hmm.
You ever heard that story?
Well, who's the group?
Well, the group is...
In real life, because you're saying Leonardo DiCaprio, but I thought this was supposed to be the Mark Wahlberg-esque, you know,
it's loosely group. Based on Wahlberg's life. From what I've always heard is that Wahlberg used to carry around a video camera in the mid-90s when he was getting into films and videotape the shenanigans him and his friends were doing. And They had hours and hours of this, and his manager, Steven Levinson, knew Doug Ellen and said, hey, we have this project, this documentary, and Wahlberg said, hey, I can't have this kind of footage getting out there. So they made a fictionalized account of it. And Doug Ellen, being from New York, changed the setting, improvised a little, and this is what we have here. But it's loosely based on Wahlberg's life. And that's kind of the fun of this show, right? Like, head on here, you see the poster. I always thought this is supposed to be Fear. You know, that's the substitute for the first movie he had, right?
It's definitely a more artsy kind of movie, which Fear kind of was, obviously.
And the breakthrough film for Wahlberg as a star.
Right, and a smaller movie as well.
But something that was important in his career at the time, which is what this is starting out at here. Because when we see Vince, this isn't the big movie star that he will become and that we know that Wahlberg will become. But a guy who's making a transition. Instead of being a rapper who's going into film, he is a television or commercial actor making the jump into being a headliner, right?
Right, yeah, definitely. I'm just laughing at Johnny Drama already.
Yeah, Drama's got – all these guys got the best life. And I always thought this movie worked because – or I'm sorry, this show and the movie worked because I never felt these guys were leeches, but yet defined personalities, and they all had defined purposes throughout the show in a family aspect. That's what I thought was ingenious. They were families and not – there was no sinisterness or vindictiveness going on with this group.
No, I agree. They're very much a tight-knit group. And, you know, I like the idea that Johnny Drama used to be the head honcho of the group, you know, so to speak. Like, he was the one supporting everyone, and now it's pushed over onto Vince.
Well, he has the outlook, and it's really a dated outlook because he's been through this before, and he always is trying to coach Vince,
right,
even though he's never achieved this level of fame or even social status, money, any of that kind of stuff. And the fact that they're half brothers is even more hilarious, and he's trying to cling on anything he has to that Chase name.
Right. I mean, here, there's this conversation alone where he's talking about hanging out with younger kids and all that, you know, people. And here he is literally at the table with younger kids.
Right. Much younger. And they always make fun, you know, act like he's their father figure. And he is kind of the patriarch in a lot of ways of the group, or struggling to be.
Yeah, he's definitely the wisdom, if you will.
I read that this took 30 drafts to get this pilot, and that they actually had a completely different version that was scrapped. HBO absolutely hated the pilot that was originally written, and after 30 drafts, this is what you get.
Well, I can imagine, because this is a show that's really, much like Seinfeld or really any other sitcom, it's really about nothing. You know, it has its moments of arc where he obviously, this guy's going to go through his career and have hit certain points of like, okay, now he's going to be in a bigger movie. You know, later on, he's going to work with James Cameron, all this kind of stuff that they're going to pull in later on, which obviously they have no idea they're going to do that in this episode. But so it's just nothing. It's about nothing. These guys are driving around right now in a limo. They're going to go screw around, you know.
But isn't this the most, this is a fantasy above all fantasies. I love this sequence right here. With Eminence Front playing, you got The Who's, one of their best songs, in my opinion, and this shot and everything. This just sells the aspect. What this show does is shows you funny and fun. There's a lot of fun shit going on in this show. Yeah. Like, this is fun. And it's also funny at the same time.
And some of the best episodes have absolutely nothing to do with movies.
But yet it's the banter with one another.
Yeah, it's these guys. It's these four characters, really, that make this show work.
However, the episodes that focus on the business are very intriguing and entertaining in their own right. Especially the Aquaman drama that will come in a year or so down the road. I read that when this show was first being pitched, or the first iteration of the draft, it was a down-on-his-luck movie star. He had suffered his first bomb, which is interesting because I believe that's the beginning of season two, if memory serves correct, where Vince's career gets a little shaky. This is still the uprise, and like I said, a fantasy, and maybe a male fantasy, because this is the inverse of Sex and the City, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the inverse. Isn't it just a male version? It's kind of the same exact thing, isn't it? These guys aren't, you know, much like Sex and the City, it's not about, you know, sex, right? That's not, these guys live that kind of lifestyle, so to speak, but they're all searching for love, really, in this show, right? Constantly.
It's such a male fantasy.
They're looking for something meaningful, though.
It's the fantasy for a young male to be sought after by women, to have your best friends available to you at all times because they have no obligation to family or other friends. You're the most important thing in their life. You're running. You have the money, and you want to show your best friends a good time. So it's all this kind of wish fulfillment at this. But I mean, if you're Mark Wahlberg, it's easy to see how this could have been your life in the '90s, in a pre-TMZ era.
Yeah, that is true. They don't really. Or he certainly wouldn't have dealt with paparazzi the way that people do now, you know. And I guess that kind of works here. That does get touched on later on in this, though. But it does work certainly during this season of the show because they're just not famous enough.
Yeah, they're under the radar still. Even though I don't believe a guy of this level of fame would get represented by somebody like Ari Gold, who's a substitute for Ari Emanuel, one of the head honchos in the business.
I don't know. You don't think that these guys, pick up little side projects here and there? I kind of feel like they must, because who's you think it's just like a junior agent representing someone like Vince?
Well, let's take Channing Tatum, for example, who's like a young Mark Wahlberg. I think that he was handled by a junior agent until he reached a certain level of fame. And then somebody like Ari Emanuel steps in and tries to push them on a global level, if that works or not.
But this just takes over.
We're talking about Ari Gold, who's on screen, and Jeremy Piven was previously in an HBO show, The Larry Sanders Show, playing a much different character.
And playing a writer.
Right, a writer, you know, and somebody who wasn't very confident. And in this, he's the most confident out of all of them. He's never wavering in his confidence in himself.
Ari Gold gives two fucks. Actually, he gives no fucks.
I was going to say, that's about two too many.
Yeah, and Allie Larder.
Here we see which would be one of the tropes of the show, a celebrity making a cameo, playing themselves, but playing a fictionalized version of themselves, or like a highly exaggerated version of themselves.
Yeah, definitely. No, that continues on throughout the entire show. And that's something that I really liked about this show, though, is that it's so grounded in reality, even though it clearly is completely fictionalized. But it's cool to see, like, oh, this could possibly kind of feels like something that could happen.
It just looks like a whole lot of fun. I mean, this sequence alone,
this is just silly.
this is the kind of stuff that they actually would start shying away from later in the series.
Right.
It was finding its way. This was only 8 episodes in the first season. It's not like there was a lot of episodes. 96 episodes.
There's not a lot of episodes in any of the seasons. This is an HBO show, yeah.
And that's because of the, I think, the care that they put into this. And I love how this whole sequence ends up with everybody getting laid but Turtle. which is kind of a running theme in this first season for sure. Mm-hmm. Turtle's a character that gets developed more. I mean, the Vinch character, they start floundering with, in my opinion, later on. And I know we'll get to all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, by the time the Sasha Gray stuff hits, I'm lost at that point on Vince.
Yeah, that was kind of my jump the shark moment too, was the addiction and all that kind of stuff. But here it's still so innocent. This is the purest version of the show at this point. Look at her. Basically saying what he already knows, that she thinks that she's going to be with Vince.
Right.
And him being so comfortable with his position in the group. And knowing what he has as leverage.
Picking up the scraps here.
But not having any problem with it.
Ridiculous. Because he knows of course not.
He wouldn't have that otherwise. He would never be in this position.
They do have such great houses, though, in this show.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I always thought that right there that was a outtake, that shouldn't have happened. That he just saw that prop probably. And kicked it, and they thought it was funny. Also shows who's the responsible ones. They're all up. Vince is still fucking around. And
yeah, a dynamic that does shift as well. And between the characters, and they fight, and sometimes someone drops the ball and someone picks it up. I mean, they're all actually, by the end of the series, you'd have to admit that all of them have definitely come into adulthood, right?
Which is not the case. Yeah, absolutely. In this first episode, they're basically high school kids running amok.
Oh, they're kids. Yeah, that was the whole pool thing. I thought, to me, that seemed so silly now, being a much older man now. But yeah, if I was, early 20s, that probably would have been a lot of fun.
I love how this sets up, too, that drama is the health nut. You know, he's worried about his gains, staying in shape, bro. He's kind of, they set him
he's
up.
So as, desperate.
He's kind of like, I think his official title would almost be trainer for Vince, even though Vince isn't very muscular, per se.
Kind of.
I always thought that was the whole idea about why he was so into fitness and telling Vince, you got to get your vitamins here, you got to do this, you know, get your protein.
Well, he's so desperate, though. I mean, that plays out with the whole, the calf implants and all the other jokes that play out through drama and his worrying about his appearance, right? He's very worried that he's going to be dropped or just not be able to find a new project.
You're right about the appearance. That's why maybe he's always suggesting that he's one of the chase men and how good looking they are. You know, he's trying to group himself with Vince always.
Yes, exactly. He does.
Yeah,
he definitely does jump on the Vince bandwagon there.
I love these behind the scene glimpses. You know, they're driving right here down the Warner Brothers back lot. HBO is obviously made or owned by Warner Brothers, Time Warner, and easy access to this. But still, it feels like it feels inside baseball in a way. You know what I mean? If they're showing us a glimpse of something, even though it's a highly fictionalized and controlled glimpse, it's still a glimpse of something, I always felt.
That's true. And a lot of the HBO shows that are inside looks to things have the same feel to this, you know?
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that they have honed in on over the years of making, I guess, behind the scenes-esque fictionalized drama.
This episode was directed by David Frankel, who would go on to direct. He previously had directed some episodes of Sex and the City, so HBO was comfortable with him. He would go on to do feature films like Devil Wears Prada and Marley and Me. So he directed this very well, and I think this is the part where they run into Wahlberg? No, they do it when they come out. There's a sequence here coming up where they run into all the actual the real-life counterparts of their fictionalized characters here, and I always loved that. Weird, you know, universal exchange here.
Yeah, and here's the setup that drama used to be the big star that these guys were mooching off of.
And that he wants.
It's really so well written.
There's no wasted line in this. Everything is to define who these people are. They use this first 30 minutes like it's tightly, tightly done. There they are right there. There's the real Turtle, Johnny Drama. Look at that cell phone. It's got an antenna in it.
That is a cell phone.
Yeah, it's so funny to see this. I mean, I forgot that this episode is the dog episode. That this is that this early on they got Arnold. I thought they got it later on in the series for some reason.
It's because the episodes are so short. I mean, the seasons are so short. You know, you kind of think that they're longer.
When did you lose interest in this show? Actually, let me ask you this, because let's go back to the very beginning, like we're talking about this.
Sure.
I came to this show, this premiered July 18th, 2004. This, to me, it was the beginning of binge watching. This was the beginning of DVR. I went home from a break at film school. My parents had a DVR box, and I was like, what's this all about? You know, they had playbackable things in this show Entourage. So I came to this, I want to say, in late 2004. I think the first eight episodes were already out, and I binge-watched it. If memory serves correct, I came back to school and told you about how good this show was, and I think one of us got our hands either on the DVD or maybe a burnt copy of something, a pirated copy. Do you recall this at all, watching it at my apartment?
I remember. I don't know how we got it, but
it wasn't brand new at the time. I want to say an episode, a whole season existed. Yeah,
yeah.
And this was a slow burn. I don't think this was a huge success initially, but this became HBO's most watched show when The Sopranos ended and before True Blood started. In that kind of chasm, that this was then their flagship show for many years. I mean, I fell in love with the show from the jump, and I thought I was going to hate it. For some reason, I didn't want to watch a show about an entourage. I thought it was a shitty idea. Doesn't it seem like a shitty idea?
I mean, the show walks a fine line between, you know, being a little too cutesy sometimes and being perhaps a little too manly. I don't know. Does that make sense?
I don't think the show could be greenlit today.
No, I don't think so at all. It would have to be vastly different, although on Netflix maybe, because they do have The Ranch, so,
which kind of plays into that idea that it's going against the grain,
right?
But isn't nearly as big as this.
Not nearly as good.
And this is really before, I mean, this is as social media is burgeoning as itself, and I think that had this had the advantage of being a Twitter trender or Instagram, this could have been even bigger. But it took a while, I think until about season two, until we all started tuning in every Sunday night to watch this.
Yeah, well, it was this first season is kind of a surprise and still is. It's so, this feels far more low budget, surprisingly enough, because this looks super clean. And clearly money was spent, but this does have a more low-budget feeling than the other seasons.
They were allowed to open up a lot more. They were going to a lot more locations. This is very confined to this house, even though I love this house. Like you said, the beautiful production design and location scouting going on here. But they opened it up to many other locations as the seasons go on.
I do love the inclusiveness, though, that this show does with this group. Specifically, now Vince is here talking about the script, and he's relying on them. And you see E as the manager really gets to have his say in this. And I don't know. I just like that, how they really are a group, you know, together. And that kind of – this setup is fantastic when they have fallouts, right?
It's a beautiful sequence here, too. This sequence and the following scene, too, with Vince is going to be the carefree one. He can't really be bothered to make a decision. He's just going to do what he does.
Yeah.
And E is going to now – we don't know it as of yet, but this is going to be his moment where he has to step up and face this 800-pound gorilla in the industry.
It's a boy here.
Right. And there's always those slights, right? Because Ari's resentful. He even has to deal with this kid who ran a pizza parlor, which we'll see in the next run. He takes him to Koi to put him on his back foot, the very bougie restaurant. And you see E stand up for himself. You see the backbone the kid has. And their contentious relationship is some of the fun that the series actually has. Because nobody dislikes Ari more than E and vice versa. Like, they're all
Lloyd.
Good with them. Oh, yeah, well, Lloyd. I forgot Lloyd. You bring up some of this stuff like the calf implants and Lloyd. And these are people that were part of my life on a yearly basis, you know? I forgot about Lloyd's plight. They haven't even introduced the Mrs. Ari yet in that whole plot strand.
Yeah, they definitely – well, Jeremy Piven almost runs off the show there, you know, especially in some of the later seasons. When things do get a little rocky with these guys, it does kind of – pan on over to Ari there
and kind of
stick with him so much. And you know, his career move through this is more insane than Vince's.
And it makes so much sense that it would be Turtle who has to put on the hockey gear and let the Rottweiler attack
him. He's the bottom rung right now. He's at the bottom of the totem pole.
But they all get chances of, for lack of a better word, fucking with each other. Oh, except for Vince. Yes. Vince can't be fucked with because they know he's the breadwinner.
Well, they do, though, even to a degree. You're right. They're a little more careful about it, but I believe there's an episode where he takes offense to that, right?
Yeah.
He wants them to fuck with him.
He's starting to feel like, I believe you're right. Yeah, see? Man, you got a better recall for this show than I did.
Treat him with kid gloves.
And here's that sequence we're talking about where Ari and E are having their first meeting, and Ari's trying to get a feel of this kid and realizes that he can dominate him, but he is mistaken to a degree.
But wouldn't you love to have these kind of business meetings? I always love this kind of stuff. I really, nothing comes out of this.
No, this is a $200 on the studio.
Two men enter, two men leave, and no one cares. But if for some reason, I don't know, I love the energy in these kind of like business dialogue scenes, you know?
Well, Piven plays this. He finds the note and runs with it here.
Oh yeah, and he's working this kid right now. He's working him. He's not being the nice guy that he thinks he is. Yeah.
And the references about Die Hard at Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see kids die, get blown up at Disneyland. He says, "Where do you want to see them get blown up?" It's the struggle that the characters go through the whole show.
Shit's about to hit the fan.
It's blue collar versus the white collar, right? In a lot of ways.
Well, I thought it was more like Art versus the corporation, right? Here, Ari wants to make money, and he wants to put Vince in a position where people love him and money comes in, right? And he doesn't really give a shit about the movies, if they're good or not. That kind of wavers season to season, you know, and as if Vince can appeal to Ari in some way, then he does. He can, his mind can be changed, but
what's also, you got,
typically, yeah.
You got Ari who's looking to make the money. Let's hit
exactly.
Now. And you got Eric who is really looking at Vince's career and trying to sustain a career and saying, I don't think this is a good choice. This might hit now, but we want to be around in a little bit. We got to show what this guy can do. And it's just, they're both right.
Yeah, well, I mean, the worry is always like you're going to make a Catwoman or something, right?
Yeah, or that you're just going to get, you know, your time may be come and gone. I hate to keep pointing to Channing Tatum.
Right.
I have no qualms against the guy, but you kind of get the sense that he's played all of his cards already at this moment as we record this in 2018. You know, what's the next step there? And to me, he's like a Wahlberg who perhaps didn't make the best choices.
Yeah.
Even though he's worked with Soderbergh and Tarantino and kind of done the Wahlberg routine of finding the talent and the David O. Russells of the world.
Well, he's not truly, I like the guy and I don't mind him in movies or anything, but he's not really very memorable. And I feel the same way kind of about Adrian Grenier here and even this Vince character. He's a movie star, but he's really not very memorable.
That's probably why he's gone on to have the least success acting wise out of maybe Jerry Ferreira here, who plays Turtle. But Connolly's still around. I mean, Connolly's directed Gaudi recently, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I haven't seen it myself, but the word is not great.
That sounds like an episode of Entourage.
Doesn't it? Yeah, I know. That's surprising they never did that, where one of them wanted to direct Vince or make Vince the director. I believe they didn't ever touch upon that. They kept him in the actor lane.
Yeah, I mean, they produce.
Which Wahlberg
they
does.
Don't really direct.
Wahlberg started producing with this show, and he continues now with Ballers. He's got it in the Wahlbergers, and he's got like a whole basically network-worthy series.
Right, he's got the car dealership over there. So
he's part of
set.
The UFC buying group of WME and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think, 2017, he was the second highest paid actor? Or he was the highest paid actor for that year, like $64 million?
Yeah, he rips people off, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's getting money.
Yeah. Well, you got, you know, when you can demand it, you got to demand it or else you'll never get it.
It's amazing to me that Wahlberg has sustained the career he sustained. And in the beginning,
he's such a nice, likable guy, though, isn't he?
I'll tell you this. Women love the guy. Guys like the guy. And he has made good movies. He's made a lot of shitty movies.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they don't seem to the hits and the misses don't seem to hurt the career. He just continues to make movies.
Yeah.
And he's made a lot of them. And some of them I don't understand why they're hits, and some of them I don't understand why they're bombs, but he continues to work. Maybe he's got this carefree attitude towards the business that Vince had when he came
did
in.
Vince has?
Yeah. I don't think he has it anymore. I read somewhere that he goes to bed at like 7:30 at night and gets up at 4:30.
So this is where Vince is now putting E in his place, right? Telling him, just reminding him, he used to be a pizza manager. You don't know everything about the business. You know, this is an interesting business, though, when you insert art into the business of filmmaking, right? Wouldn't you agree? Because now here you have a situation where you have a guy who says he likes this, and artistically he thinks this is the better movie, right? And so it's the better one to make, but it's a choice, right? And if you don't have any weight to throw around, your opinion is absolutely meaningless.
Well, it's also that he doesn't know what to do with himself here. I feel like Vince still was like lucked into this. And if it goes away, he doesn't care. I think he even tells him that at some point.
Yeah.
You know,
when they have the big fallout. Yeah. And he goes home and stuff. Yeah.
You know, if we have to go back to New Jersey, we have to go back to New Jersey. I think he tells me at this episode, like, who would have thought? And to him, it's like such a lark. That's the fun of the show, too.
Oh, there it is right there. Yeah.
It's the millionaire dream. You know, it's a lottery dream. You're the struggling commercial actor, and now you're a movie star.
Yeah, as far as he's concerned, this is all the same so far. He really hasn't, I guess, been exposed to the fame yet, or even the accolades. You know, the idea of being in something really, really good and big, it hasn't hit him yet. So he's not really all in on this career yet.
This scene always bothered me in this episode. I don't know why, because they smoke a lot of weed during this and get fucked up a lot. But this just seemed amateurish to me, to have them sit on a couch with a bong.
Some of the blocking in this episode alone, I've seen, though I've talked about it being cheap, but I agree with you, the blocking is just super stiff.
I mean, they could have done, and they just, it seemed like this was a rushed last minute scene. This is like something out of student film right here.
It's just cheap, and it is first seasons, especially first episodes, can be a little stilted because people don't really know each other. These guys are supposed to be longtime friends, and they don't know each other, you know.
I'll give you that's fair. I never liked this block. And I didn't like this whole... I never liked that. He doesn't follow through on that. That always rang false to me. When Vince just said, anybody that comes in this airspace, I'm taking. It's a dick thing to say, for one. And maybe true of a movie star. But like, two, he doesn't ever follow through with that. He never sleeps with one of the other guy's girls. You know what I mean? Or their ex-girlfriend. You know, when E falls in love or when Turtle's hung up on somebody... It's not like Vince goes and screws them and threatens their and they got to eat that.
Yeah, Vince does say things in a similar fashion to that throughout the show, though, and not really, maybe a little bit out of character for him, but funny at the time, and maybe he was just making a joke, you know?
I never liked that.
Yeah.
But this is a great little...
I do like this shit,
yeah. Yeah, because the pranking each other is exactly what you'd hope they would do. They're entertaining themselves while they're living this dream. It's the which wouldn't get, you know, that bumper sticker wouldn't fly today. HBO testing wouldn't. I really don't think that would get on air.
Huh?
I believe this is the final sequence, right, of the episode.
Yeah.
Is it Colin Farrell is the culprit here? Back when Colin Farrell actually had name value to headline a film. Yeah, Colin Farrell takes it. Well, you know that would be a bomb anyway, so he dodged a bullet.
Well, if they're taking Colin Farrell, then yeah.
This is when he was fresh off of SWAT, pre Total Recall. Oh, that'd be fair. Yeah, he's not the problem with Total Recall. This must be a tough pill to swallow as an actor of that level. When you're playing the game and somebody else just comes in and underbids you, or they think that maybe you're not, you don't have the clout you do. It's great. That's the ego check of the show, right? Isn't that what they're constantly doing? They're giving him something, then checking him.
Is he even in the running, you know, at that point? Like, how many times do we constantly hear in real life Hollywood, right, where they just have a slew of people lined up for a part?
Yeah, and everybody's testing for it.
A lot of them are small, right? Yeah, so he could have just been fodder there, you know, just a name to include in the list.
I think that's one of the strongest pilots of HBO shows. I think it's a stronger pilot than something like even The Sopranos pilot. I'm not the biggest fan of. I think the SHOT show gets better, and so does Ballers and things like that. That's a great pilot. I haven't seen that pilot in years.
Yeah, it makes me want to watch more. This was this is an addictive show for me. Like I could just sit and watch episode after episode because they almost blend together. They're really, even though this, they have a beginning, middle, and end, you know, they just don't seem to end on any hard note necessarily. You know, especially this first season, they just kind of flow out.
And they got great music for the ending. Right there, they had Jay-Z's Lucifer, which is a great tune to end this on. And the, like I said, the ego check. If he thought he was maybe big shit because he had the movie head on that was doing well, and then the reality check of somebody else can come in and get this that's bigger. There's always the bigger fish, which is a lot of what right. they get at the show. Well, that's going to wrap up our inaugural podcast of the Entourage episode guide. We want to thank you guys for joining us. Always remember to check us out on Spotify, YouTube, wherever else you may be getting these podcasts. I believe this is going to be a YouTube exclusive, right?
You don't want to put it on the
podcast? Let's
the
put podcast? It on the... No, I'm sorry. I messed up. Of course, we're going to give it to you guys out there in the world of podcasting. But if you'd like to, you can go to YouTube and play along this... Watch it and play it along with your own episode. So check us out next week. We'll be back with another episode of Entourage. Thanks for listening, guys.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!